As I get older and nearer where we're all going, I hope, things don't come as easy as they used to. And I was sitting there as we were praying, and I thought, this is sort of, I feel a little bit like Samson when he's given himself away to Delilah. You think that you have the same strength and agility that you always had, and you don't know that the spirit, in Samson's case, you don't know that the spirit has left you. And so you try to do the same things that you used to be able to do, and you can't do them. And Samson had the opportunity to pray a prayer, Lord, strengthen me yet this one more time. And he pulled the pillars of the temple down. And he killed more in his death than he killed in his whole ministry. So I feel a little bit like that sometimes. I wonder if I haven't sinned away my ability to preach and my ability to think and the agility that I pretended I had when I was younger is rapidly going away. And these are realities that I think about and talk with my family about. And I gave Caleb permission to tell me when I'm done. I said, I won't trust anybody else, but I'll trust you. You can tell me when I'm done. And so I'm waiting to hear that one of these days. He mentioned to me today that his mom wanted to be in service today, and she couldn't be. I'd really like to have her here. Well, in order to be kind to you all, we won't start at Genesis 12, because Genesis 12 is going to lead to 13, is going to lead to 14, is going to lead to 16, is going to lead to 17, is going to lead to 18, and we're going to get to 19, where I really want to be. So we're going to go to 19. And we're going to talk about a very controversial subject. And in my mind, I don't know, and again, this goes with where I'm at. I'm thinking, I have a Sunday after, it must be Sunday school class. The children will be in the back room and I can talk to them then. So that's not good. That's not the case. So we'll have to truncate some of our sentences and some of our thoughts to keep it in bounds. Genesis 12, 1 through 6 is the call of Abraham. You know, we're going to go to 19. We're going to get there. You know, Abraham is called, and he's called out of Ur of the Chaldees. And we know the Ur of the Chaldees is a pagan place. And there is no witness for God except maybe Job. Maybe Job was from that part of the world, too. They were contemporaries with Job. And he's called out. And I said, Abraham was called out, or Abram was called out, and he was called in. Part of what God does is he calls people out to call them in. The church is made up of people who are called out and called in. We're not just called out to wander in the wilderness. He calls us out and he calls us in. And we become part of the bride of Christ. And Abraham was called out and called in to a land that he'd never seen. You imagine him making a mission presentation. And they say, where are you going? He says, I don't know. We need money, but I don't know where we're going. He didn't, by the way. He was very rich. He went, where are you going? I don't know. What are you going to do? I don't know. The Lord called me. I'm going. And, you know, it'd be hard to get money out of a church, wouldn't it? I said, I want to know where you're going. I want to know what you're doing. I want to know how many souls you're going to save this week. Get out there. Do it, boy, but tell me where you're going. Abraham was called out. He didn't know really where he was going. And didn't know really what he was going to do. And he was faithful. And he wasn't totally faithful. He was totally human. He failed. He said, God said, get you over there to Canaan, the land I'll show you. He comes into Canaan. And what's he do? There's a famine in the land. He runs right through Canaan. He goes to Egypt. Right in, right out. And Christians do that, don't we? We come out. We get in trouble, a famine in the land. And we run right back to Egypt. We run where we're comfortable. It takes a little while, doesn't it? Well, by the time we get to 19, Abraham already, as his name has been changed by now, and he is Abraham and not Abram anymore. And his wife still hasn't borne him a child. And things are not looking so good on the home front. And he has three visitors come in 18. Two angels and the personification of the Lord. And I was looking at some of the doctrines that are implied in this passage, and there's so many things the themes that are in this passage. The sovereignty of God runs all the way through this, of course, and his provision, and his testing, and his trials, the doctrine of faith, the doctrine of salvation. All of these things are present. And Abraham, by chapter 19, is pretty mature in his walk, and he has a lot of confidence in the Lord. And the three visitors come, and they deliver him a message. And they say, it's in the heat of the day. We're going over to see what's going on in Sodom. The cry of Sodom has come up to the Lord, and we're going over there. And Abraham has intercessory prayer. And he prays in this fashion, Lord, if you find 10 righteous, will you spare the city? Abraham intercedes for the city where his nephew Lot lives. Now, how did Lot get there? He used to be a traveling companion with Abraham. When they came out of Egypt, they were rich. They were both wealthy. That meant they had a lot of herds, and they had a lot of people. And the land couldn't bear them in proximity. You know how many, I know you know this. I wish John was here, he'd know exactly. The question is, how many acres of land do you need to feed one cow and stay on that land so that that cow doesn't exhaust the food supply? How many acres of land does it take to feed one cow? Well, I happen to know that. Six. So you have to have 6 acres per cow if you're going to have them pastured. 6 acres. They had thousands of goats and camels and donkeys. And the land could not bear them. And Abraham wisely says, it's time for us to separate. The land can't hold us. And Abraham does a very wise thing. God has already given him the land. God says, you know, look, as far as you can see and further, it's all yours. It's all yours. I'm going to give you the land and I'm going to give you people. I know you don't have the kids, but you're going to have. He made a promise to Abraham. This is your land. And Abraham does a very wise thing. You can read it. Abraham defers to nephew Lot. And he says, Lot, you choose first. Hey, he didn't say, hey, this is my land. God gave this to me. No, he says, you choose first. You know how exactly to be in the will of God? Let God choose. And Abraham lets God choose. He could have bullied in there. He could have said, this is mine. I like this. Look at the pasture over there. I could double my herd. But he doesn't do any of that. He says, you take the right, I'll go to the left. You take the left, I'll go to the right. And by doing that, he's letting God choose. He's not taking it to himself and lording it over and claiming his rights. We have a lot of rights. No, we don't have any. We don't have any. But Abraham defers. And so Lot, it says in chapter 13, and Lot lifted up his eyes and saw the well-watered plain over there by Jordan. He, all signs. He said, I'm going this way. Abraham said, fine, good. Lord bless you. Go that way. And he looked toward Sodom. He walked by sight and not by faith. He went down and pitched his tent toward Sodom. You know, there's not many of us that can do that successfully. There's not many of us that can go and live in proximity of the world. I mean, philosophically. And not get tarnished by it. And we swim in an ambience now. It's corrosive to faith. Corrosive to families. It's corrosive to structure. It's corrosive to truth. And the folks with the clout can make us say things we would not ever say. When you're filling out the forms for the government, I got to answer it somehow. I got to put an answer down here. Filled out that crazy census program thing. Got to fill out the census. I don't want to answer those questions. It's none of their business. They need to know how many people are in the house. How many got my last name? That's all they need to know. And there's penalties if you don't answer it. So you're male, female, other? Don't want to mention it? What are you? He pitched his tent towards Sodom. And the angels came, and while he was now, by the time we get to 18, he's already moved into Sodom. 13, he's closed. 18, he's in. And not only is he in, but he's been in a while, because he's in a place of leadership. He's in the system. He's just sitting in the gate. And the gate is where people, that's where the town fathers are. That's when there's debates and things that have to be decided. That's where they go. They go to the gate. And if there's a king in that city, the king takes it. Whoever's appointed in leadership takes the responsibility to settle disputes. So Abraham asked the Lord, will you spare the city for 10 righteous? And I believe the person he's talking to is Jesus, and I think this is a very good picture of prayer. And he says, would you spare for 8? And he goes down very graciously, very humbly. He doesn't know, and he works his way down. And I think he stopped because he was counting on his fingers. Well, he didn't have to. He's a business maker, didn't he? He was counting on his fingers how many children Lot had. And he said, well, I know that one's married. And certainly Lot wouldn't let her marry a lost man. So she got a saved husband. And maybe they got children. And they'll be raised in the Christian faith. And he's got other daughters and sons, and they're all Christians. And when he got to the number he felt safe at, he stopped. Now that's all speculation. All speculation. But sure enough, he did stop. And why did he stop? Didn't run out of faith. He had Jesus' ear. He could have gone one more round. Mercy and grace sufficient. But he didn't. So I speculate. It's sanctified speculation, but it's speculation. So when we get to 19, the Lord is not with them when they come to the city. It's just the two angels. And it came the two angels, so we have the doctrine of angels, came to Sodom at even, and Lot sat in the gate of Sodom, and Lot, seeing them, rose up to meet them, and bowed himself with his face toward the ground. So Lot is saved. He's a saved man. Now there isn't anything in these chapters that are going to indicate that he is saved. Peter tells us he's saved. That this vexed his righteous soul. But there's nothing in here that would indicate to us saved, unless you say this spiritual perception. He recognized the angels for what they were. They weren't normal Sodomite people. It wasn't people like you ordinarily see. And respect, he goes to them and said to them, behold, now, my lords, I pray you in your servant, turn in, I pray you, into your servant's house and tarry all night and wash your feet, and ye shall rise up early in the morning, be on your ways. And he said, nay, but we will abide in the street all night. Well, Lot knows what's going to happen to them if they stay in the street. And he begs them, don't, please don't do that. Come to my house. And he makes it as inviting as he can. And come, have something to eat, wash your feet. And they turn him down. In verse 3, he's more aggressive. He pressed upon them greatly. Please turn into my house. Enter into my house. And they did. And he made a feast for them. And he baked unleavened bread. And I always thought that was a recognition also, a sign of recognition. Leaven is usually a symbol of corruption in the Bible. I think there's only one place where it can be strewed as something good. And so unleavened bread, leavening is a corrupting thing. You get those little bugs crawling around the dough, and they eat the sugar, and they give off gas, and the gas makes bubble in the dough, and there you go, and you got bubbles in your bread. It's leavened bread. Yahoo! It went from distal to distal, and it was all blown up there by bug gas. Well, I'm just telling you. So it's usually a symbol of corruption. And it is, in fact, a chemical thing, I guess. And the bugs die. They can't take the heat. So, unleavened bread. Maybe it's just unleavened bread because that's what was the easiest to make. They didn't have to wait. And they did eat. Before they lay down, the men of the city, even the men of Sodom, compassed the house about, both old and young, all the people from every quarter. There's a certain aggressiveness here. There's a certain aggressiveness in this picture. And it tells us that the men and the boys came, the young and the old came. There are what frontiers are left in the so-called sexual revolution? What's left? Well, there's only about three things left. Only about three perversions left. One of those perversions is already very well organized, has an association called MEMBA, and they're going, that'll be the next front probably, where sanity will be challenged. They came. And Lot went out the door unto them and shut the door behind him. You sense this is a very unpleasant situation. He's worried about his family. He's worried about his guests. He's trying to protect them. What are you going to do? Your house is surrounded. Verse 5 tells us what this is all about. They called unto Lot and said unto him, where are the men which came in unto thee this night? Bring them out unto us that we may know them. And you recognize the euphemism. Their desires are plain and open and public and aggressive. This is the ambience we swim in today. This is where we are culturally. A very serious time, ladies and gentlemen. Very serious times. And there's nothing really we can do about it. Because we are who we are where we are in the time we're here. And as we are here, in this time, in this point of world history, this is not having to do with a state, a town. This is world history right now happening around us and to us. The Lord will have to do something, or nothing is going to be done to stop it. We can't stop it. The Lord is going to have to intervene. Lord pleads with his fellow citizens, the ones who have allowed him to be the selectman, the one who's allowed him to sit in the gate, the ones who have listened to him when he settled disputes between the people of the city. Those people, he says, brethren. Boy, must have been hard to say. Knowing the significance of the word, brethren, do not so wickedly. Don't do this wicked thing. Behold now, I have two daughters. You know how desperate he is? You know how eviscerated he is? You know how humbled he is? How fearful he is? How panicky he is? I have two daughters. The angels intervene, because the only thing that's going to stop this is the divine intervention. The angels, in verse 9, said, stand back. And again, this one fellow came, I put the wrong people in here. In verse 9, the people of Sodom say to Lot that this man, this fellow, came in and will need to sojourn with us, to visit with us, and will needs be our judge now. We will deal worse with thee than with them. And they pressed upon the man, even Lot, and he came near to break the door. But the men, the angels inside, put forth their hand and pulled Lot into the house with them and closed the door. And they smote the men that were at the door of the house with blindness, both small and great, so that they wearied themselves to find the door. But Lot is safe. Intervention saved him. But they kept on trying. They tried so hard that they wearied themselves trying to achieve what they wanted to achieve. Even blind. That's aggressive. That's persistent. That's almost unrepairable. In the midst, said unto Lot, hast thou here any besides, any sons or daughters? I'm sorry, that's another thing that's happening. The eyes are going, the glasses are no good. The dyslexia is taking over. Okay. Sons, thy sons and thy daughters, whosoever thou hast in the city, bring them out of this place. bring them out of this place. Escape from this place. Not because you're going to get away from what is happening in the streets of Sodom, but because God is going to destroy this place. And in order to destroy it, you have to be gone. Because Christians are salt and light. And they have to be removed before judgment comes. Unless the judgment's on them, of course. Enoch, way back in Genesis 5, was a preacher of righteousness. Job tells us he preached about the second coming of Christ back in Genesis 5. And he walked with God. What a testimony. He walked with God. And the Bible says, and Enoch was not, because God took him. Whoa. He's gone. He's out of here. He's up there. And you know, the old preacher used to say, not this old preacher, but I heard old preacher say it. He said, God and Enoch walked together so long that one day they were closer to God's house than Enoch's house, and God said, you might as well come home with me. But God took him out. And then judgment came in the form of the flood. Methuselah was born. His name means when he dies, it shall be sent. And when he died, it was sent. He lived 100. He lived 900 years, almost as old as me. He lived over 900 years. God's grace and mercy, his long-suffering, his patience. And when he died, the flood came. God kept Noah through the flood, in the ark, and he delivered Enoch from the flood. So they continue on, and the angels tell Lot. Now listen, wouldn't you, we're fairly astute. How many of you got an easy boy or something like that? Anybody got an easy boy? Well, you think I'm going to tell on you? I swapped to yours for mine. We get comfortable furniture. And it wasn't comfortable when we first got it, but we've sat on it so much now it even looks like us. So it's comfortable now. And we like it. And we know where the refrigerator is. And we know where to put the remote control. We're wired. We're there. And two angels come in and said, hey, you, get your kids, get your wife, get out of here. Well, I gotta look around here. Where's my boogie bag? I gotta find my stuff. I gotta have my radio, my camera, my cell phone. There's such stuff I gotta have when I travel like that, because you never know when you're gonna have a flat tire. And you need to call AAA, so you gotta have a boogie bag. And we would loiter around there and say, it's not serious. The lights are still on. Phone service. I got cell. I even got internet. It's not that serious. Whatever's happening is not that serious. And so we would lollygag around collecting our bits that are essential for sudden travel. And then we'd think about, well, I don't know, the kid's got a cold, I don't know whether I want to take him out in the night air, you know, there's stuff you got to think about. And listen, I'll bet you we would lollygag. Because there would be one more thing. Getting Mrs. Clark out the door for churches, one more thing. We got 500 square feet of apartment. And she has to walk from the bathroom to the door. Oh no. I gotta go in. We have a bedroom. I gotta go in there, adjust the blinds, shut the window, and then you come out here. I gotta click this, pet the dog. Pet the dog. Close that. Okay. So we're toast. If it happens in my house, we're toast. I'm cooked. We're not getting out of there in time. It's urgent. The things of God are urgent. But we drag our feet. God says, we say, well, let me think about that. Now, could I interpret it? Maybe I can nuance this a little bit and make it a little more comfortable. Could I wait for the moving van? That's how we think. We don't obey God immediately. We drag our feet. And if he gets us where he wants us, it's because he drug us. Well, we had a little economic pressure. We had a little sickness pressure. We had this breakdown pressure. We had this invitation. We had that door closed. God drags us through circumstances to get us where he wants us. Oh, yeah, I went out, Lord called me, and I went, oh, yeah, you did. You took it 3 years before you made up your mind. You were trying to figure out how much money you're going to lose. You went. He said, get out of this place, for we will destroy this city. That cranks it up a notch. Destroy this city, can you believe it? We just finished the school. It's brand new. The bonds are still out on that sucker. Who's going to pay for this? You're going to burn the temple down? Our God's bigger than your God. We play all these games. Now listen to this. Dads, listen. And Lot went out and spake unto his sons-in-law, which had married his daughters. And he said, up, get you out of this place, for the Lord will destroy this city. But he seemed as one that mocked unto his sons-in-law. He said, you're joking. You're joking. You got some special kind of Hebrew holiday. What are you talking about? Is this April Fool's Hebrew style? He was joking. His testimony was a joke among his own children. Can you imagine? You imagine trying to lead a family when your testimony is a joke to those you love and want to lead. So they don't go. They don't leave. They stay there. And it says the angels to get Lot, his wife, and the daughters that were there laid hands on them and literally, physically took them out of the city. Sort of reminds me of Thessalonians there. There's a passage there where people kind of go up. And out. This is pretty serious. The angels hastened Lot, saying, arise, take thy wife and thy two daughters, lest thou be consumed in this iniquity. And while he lingered, the men laid hold on his hand and upon the hand of his wife and upon the hand of his two daughters. And the Lord being merciful unto them, that they brought them forth and set them without the city. And it came to pass that as they brought them forth abroad, that he said, escape for thy life, look not behind thee, neither stay thou at all in the plain. Escape to the mountain, lest thou be consumed. And Lot said, oh, not so, my Lord. Are you kidding me? They've been drug out of the city. The city's about to be destroyed. The angel says, don't stay in the plain. Don't stay here. Get up to the mountains. There's about to be a big explosion here. You want to get as far away as you can in the time you've got. Go to the mountains. And he says, oh, not so, my Lord. Isn't that a contradictory situation when you say, not so, my Lord? How many times do we say that to God? He tells us, we say, oh, so you didn't really mean that. Not so, my Lord. Sounds spiritual. Just isn't. And so, he says, he petitions the angel, says, now if thy servant has found grace in thy sight, remember that good bread I gave you? If thy servant has found grace in thy sight, and thou hast magnified thy mercy, and thou hast shown unto me, and saving my life, I cannot escape to the mountains, lest some evil take me, and I die. Can you imagine? He's worried about some evil taking him to die, and the angel just told him, hey, you're out of here, and saved his life, and now he's worried about having a traffic accident. It's amazing. And we're no better. Or at least I'm not. Maybe you are, but I'm not. Behold, now this city is near. So he offers an alternative. He says, let me go to that little city. It's not a big city. There's not a lot of sin there. Let me go there. And he said unto him, see, verse 21, see, I have accepted thee concerning this thing also, and I will not overthrow this city which thou hast spoken. So they escaped thither. He tells them, get out of here, because I can't do anything until you're clear. And the next morning, when the sun was up, fully up, verse 24, then the Lord rained upon Sodom and upon Gomorrah, brimstone and fire from the Lord out of heaven. And he overthrew those cities and all the plain and all the inhabitants of the cities and that which grew upon the ground. But his wife, that's Lot's wife, but his wife looked back from behind him and became a pillar of salt. There is in Pompeii, there's all these mummified people that were mummified by Vesuvius, by the eruption of Vesuvius. And they have, in the city when they excavated, they found these mummified people. Some at work, some making meals, all kinds of life, real situations. They were mummified. And there's one particular woman who appears, she's pointed toward the gate. It appears as though she's in an attitude of trying to escape. But her body is turned and her hand is out like this. She's just received a bag of pearls. And she's dead. And she's mummified. And 1,000 years later they dig her up. And she tells a story. These pearls. This is my boogie bag. That's what I'm going to need when I leave here. She looked back. I don't blame Mrs. Lot for looking back. She's got children there. She's got probably got grandchildren there. She's got a house there. Her knitting is not done. She's got stuff over there. And is it really going to be as bad as all that? Is it really? I hear the noise, but is it really that bad? The women are not curious. There's no curiosity whatsoever. So how would we be frozen? Looking back at the things that are left behind, the things we think we left for God's sake, how will we be frozen? What will our mummies look like? Better stop. We won't take the next section.